Maybe I'll come to order. Representative Bigum moved House File 2553.
Just a moment. Representative Winkler, let's go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We're all very well familiar with the 35W bridge collapse catastrophe that occurred last summer. We've had a lot of public information in the newspapers and media about the terrible injury and loss of life that many people suffered who were on the bridge that day. Those stories also include stories about lost wages, medical expenses in the hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars, long-term disability, and other financial hardships. This committee, I'm sure, is well aware of the state's liability cap for tort claims, as well as some of the procedural bars that plaintiffs face in trying to sue the state of Minnesota. The $1 million incident cap for that the state currently has in place that would apply to this August 1st event, and the $300,000 individual cap would leave the roughly 150 people affected by this disaster with, even if they were able to fully recover from the state for that full amount, with approximately $6,000 apiece to deal with all of the economic loss they've suffered. My point of view, I guess, is that this is a state bridge. We designed it, built it, maintained it, inspected it, and it was our responsibility to make sure it didn't fall. And likewise, it is our responsibility to make sure that the survivors of that incident are not left holding the financial bag of that catastrophe. The bill has two sections. Article 1 is a general statement of, or it's a general provision creating a concept of a special compensation fund. Article 2 is specific to 35W. It's important to note at the beginning that Article 2 creates, has a legislative finding of purpose, and it appropriates the funds for the survivor compensation fund. But it only does so, and this fund could only be invoked in the future if the legislature appropriated money and the governor signed a bill appropriating money into this. So it's really only leaving in place a concept in law that the state, in an extraordinary situation, may come to the aid of individual survivors of a catastrophe like we witnessed in this summer with 35W. In Section 2 of Article 1, Subdivision 5, we clarify that survivors cannot receive any punitive damages or attorney fees as a result of their application to a fund such as this. Section 3 establishes a third-party administrator, which is a special master, to be appointed by the state's executive council, which consists of the governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, attorney general, and state auditor. Part C under Section 3 specifies that the special master would report their expenses to the attorney general. There's no otherwise no role for the attorney general other than to receive that report. And it also, Section 3 under Article 1 sets forth a 1% cap on the total administrative expenses of the fund. Subdivision 3 requires that the special master provide a proposed compensation amount to a survivor 120 days after they first submit the application. And the timing of this is such that the survivor would actually know what the state proposes for the compensation fund prior to their having to sign a release of their claim against the state. So it doesn't compel them to sign a release without knowing ultimately where they may end up. And for that reason, once they accept the compensation amount that's proposed, it's a final decision with no appeal. Survivors would have 30 days to make a decision on whether to accept that. And under Subdivision 4 of Section 3 of Article 1, we have language clarifying that the release that the special master issues must be a Perringer-style release. Subdivision 5 and subdivision 6 deal with issues of indemnity, contribution, and subrogation. Essentially, it preserves the state's ability to seek contribution or indemnity from third-party tortfeasors, such as a private contractor. And it also specifies that funds from the compensation fund will not go to any third party who may have a subrogation interest. The state, of course, can seek its indemnification from third parties. Section 4 is the data practices section. It simply states that the only public information related to a claim submitted to the survivor fund is the name of the applicant and the amount that they're awarded and the relief language. All other information is private. Section 5 clarifies that there's no admission of state liability. And it's important to note here that this has no effect on the state's liability caps. We're not changing the individual or the single occurrence caps. We're simply taking a fund, setting it aside from those caps, and leaving that state liability cap system in place as it stands today, rather than, and the goal, I think, is that we have this highly unusual event, a unique catastrophe. I think nothing like this has happened before. And rather than changing the state's entire liability cap structure because of this very unusual event, we should leave the state's traditional cap structure in place and create an extraordinary remedy for an extraordinary event. Section 6 specifies, among other things, that the fund could receive gifts from private parties, and the statute is effective immediately. Article 2, which starts on 6.2, is specific to 35W. Section 1 is a legislative finding or statement of purpose, if you will, and this is kind of a key piece. It's the legislature's finding that the August 1st bridge collapse is of such a nature that it qualifies for the distribution of money through a special fund such as is outlined in Article 1. In Section 2, we have 30 days for the Executive Council to appoint the special master. We clarify that the definition of survivor in the instance of 35W means that the individual must have been on the bridge to receive any of the compensation. But of course, that would also include, if somebody who lost their life, their family would recover through their estate. Part E under Section 2 also says that the emergency relief payment structure that was set up last November, up to $20,000 a person now for lost wages due to physical injury on the bridge, that program will stop once this fund is established. The idea is that that was an interim step, and this is meant to provide a fuller resolution to the situation these people face. Subdivision 2 under Section 3, I think bears noting, that's a grant to Waite House. And there was an article this weekend about the Waite House kid in the Star Tribune. Waite House is a community organization that the kids who were on the school bus were going to when the bridge collapsed. It was a youth program, and they were all involved. A lot of them actually start as young children and move up through the program to be youth leaders and become employees of the program. So it's kind of a leadership track within the community anyway. And Waite House, since the disaster, has been providing kind of a single point of contact to these families for all the services that they need, including the group therapy sessions for the kids who are not really, don't belong actually appropriately in the adult group therapy sessions. So it's been a community center that's really provided a lot of services to these families. They have now a three-year business plan to provide basically case management for all of the families who are involved. And so because this is an area with a high concentration of poverty and a number of other challenges, having a kind of a designated case manager is something that I think makes a lot of sense. And if you had a chance to meet with them and see some of their testimony, I think you'd agree. And it's important to note here that the Minnesota Health Fund, the private charitable fund that was set up immediately after the incident, has already paid a considerable portion of this business plan model that they have. I guess that's the basics of the bill. You know, we met in special session on September 11th, and we passed a major disaster compensation package for southeastern Minnesota. And the state of Minnesota was not ready to deal with this situation. This is not something we'd done before. We didn't know how to get together quickly and pass a compensation fund or any other kind of relief for these individuals. We've had a lot of discussion about the steel and concrete rebuilding that we need to do for the 35W bridge. But the purpose of the bill is basically to ensure that we don't forget about the need to see to the human cost and the responsibility, I think, of the state of Minnesota to be there for people when we failed in our basic responsibility of providing safe public infrastructure.
Representative Winkler, do you have any witnesses?
Mr. Chair, I have no witnesses. There are bridge survivors and the representatives in the audience that the committee would like to hear from them. But my plan was to put the bill before you and take questions.
Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that wanted to testify on this bill? Okay. Then we'll open it up to questions or comments. I saw Representative Cole first, but he says Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, we had this in the Government Operations Committee last week, and at that time I didn't have a copy of an article dated August 20th of 2007 where you were quoted as saying, you're talking about the 9/11 experience in reference to a victim's compensation fund. And you're quoted as saying, to obtain compensation, however, they will have to show that the collapse was caused by the negligence of others. Two things that I'd like you to address. First off, is there has been no determination, as far as I know, and maybe I've missed it, as to whether or not a person or entity bears responsibility for the actual collapse, other than the collapse happening itself. In fact, I think the investigation is still ongoing in that regard. And I'd like you to comment on that. And second, I'd like to know what's changed since August 20th for you that you would now propose this fund that has no regard whatsoever to the actual existing legal framework that everybody operates under that seems to work quite well. In other words, there will be no determination or necessity to determine fault under your proposal. If you could address those two things, I'd appreciate it.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I'll address your first point, Representative Emmer, I guess, the determination of liability. No, there has not been. And as I think we're all well aware, CNTSB and others are still looking into the basic causes of the collapse. I guess my point of view from, and maybe this is a, you know, I'm a, from just as a state representative and a member of the one of the governing councils of the state, is that it's a state responsibility. We don't want to be in a position where we have to post signs at the edge of each bridge saying, cross at your own risk. But fundamentally, this is a state responsibility, and that we don't need to have a formal or technical determination of liability for the specific causes of the collapse in order to know that the state of Minnesota fundamentally is responsible for ensuring that the infrastructure it provides is safe. And as to the quote, I don't recall the quote. I'm not sure I followed the piece that you read. I don't know what that applied to. I don't remember ever advocating the position that we had to wait until we knew full liability before acting for these folks.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll let you see a copy of the article. Well, then, I guess if I understand correctly, Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, the issue, as you see it, is because it was a state or public bridge, and it fell down while citizens were on it, the state should pay something to the victims. Is that right?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Winkler.
Amber, I guess it's my position that only the state was in a position to avoid the risk, if you want to use kind of a legal analysis. And again, I don't think that we need to look at this as proprietors of a bridge. I think we need to look at it as public servants. What right does the public have to expect? What does the public have to expect from us in the infrastructure that we're offering? Is it going to be safe, or is it going to disappear without any notice? And do we want to give them the risk and shift the risk to them to avoid public infrastructure that looks unsafe? Or do we want to stand up as a public policy matter and say, we are responsible for this?
Representative Bimmer. Yeah, last one, then I'll let somebody else. Representative Winkler, the question I have, while I respect your view then, is how did you make a determination as to what the fund was going to be available for? What ill are you trying to cure? Because, as you know, I offered almost a medical expense paid proposal at our last hearing, and I still don't have an answer as to why you think the fund should replace the civil justice system for all these different damages that you would propose, that your economic and non-economic, meaning pain and suffering, etc. Why are you including all of those?
Representative Winkler.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Emmer, I almost think you're trying to serve me up a softball here. The system doesn't work in this case because of the state liability caps and the other procedural barriers we put in front of plaintiffs to recover. And if we left them to the position of having to sue the state of Minnesota to get anything beyond their medical expenses paid, as you proposed, we're subjecting them to years of litigation, we're subjecting the state of Minnesota to millions of dollars in legal fees, and we're not really resolving any particular... And, by the way, we're putting the state in a position of having to say, it wasn't our fault. We shouldn't have to pay out. My guess is we're going to want to settle at some point. I just think it would be better to do it now rather than to spend a lot of time and a lot of money waiting and holding the survivors hostage meanwhile. So I don't think the civil litigation system works very well in this case, actually.
Mr. Chair, that was my last question, but I do have to, for the record, let Representative Winkler know that logic just doesn't work. It might have been a softball to you, but you see, you said earlier in your presentation that you think the caps are just fine and they should stay in place. So out of the one hand, you say the caps are fine, and you and I have discussed that if you're going to do this the right way, get rid of the caps. The caps are there because of a decision that it happened in 1961 or 62. Legislature passed municipal tort liability, and then to protect a municipal entity, city, the state, etc., protect their treasury, they put in these caps. Well, in fact, everybody's got insurance. So if you truly wanted to address this situation the way you're saying now, it's very easy to do, and to suggest that it's going to take years, that argument, Representative Winkler, was made by Representative Kahn in the Government Operations Committee. She tried to suggest that the victims of the 9/11 fund or a terrorist attack are just now getting to court. Folks, there were 5,000 claims that arose out of the 9/11 attack. Out of that, there were only a dozen that actually decided that they wanted to fight and go to court, and out of that, there's a handful right now, 7 years later, that are in the court system. So around here, Minnesota actually does work. It's about a year from the date of filing. So, and the thing that Representative Winkler is not pointing out, and I hope somebody asks some questions about it, is the fact that this doesn't solve a thing, because you are putting a victim's compensation fund out there, but you're also allowing for all these other suits to continue. So you're still going to have protracted litigation that's going to involve private entities and the state when those private entities sue the state. So I understand that your proposal is well-intentioned, but I still think there are several problems. And I don't know when you want to take, if you want to keep going with questions or when you want to take amendments, but I do have one when the chair's ready.
Does anybody have a question or...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, I appreciate the bill, and I think everybody in the legislature would like to see something done for the victims of this horrible tragedy. I just have a question about the definition of catastrophe, and I guess why we're creating a permanent fund. I guess would be my first question, and my second question is are we setting a precedent with this? By in other words, if there was a flood or some other natural disaster, and if the citizens who were harmed or killed in that kind of natural disaster, I could see the day where a member would bring or ask the state to kick in the survivor's compensation law in order to handle that kind of catastrophe. I mean, do you see this as a precedent for further events that could be enormously costly to the state and maybe something that insurance would actually cover for most individuals? So I guess two parts to the question, if you got them both.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think so. The first question was, why a permanent fund, and are we setting a precedent? I mean, the first, I guess, response would be that the state, we were ill-equipped to deal with this. We hadn't dealt with a situation quite like this before. We dealt with natural disasters, and our September 11th special session showed that we, however we may argue about its effectiveness, we at least have a tradition of passing major disaster recovery bills and getting those done quickly. And we don't, however, we don't have any kind of mechanism in state statutes to deal with a significant man-made or non-natural disaster, I suppose you could say. And so setting up a permanent fund, I think, first of all, would it set a precedent? Yes, but I think this is the way to set the least binding of precedents, because the bar to invoking this kind of fund again is set, would be set pretty high. And again, it couldn't happen without the full action of the legislature and signature by the governor. So this isn't an ongoing bureaucracy or an ongoing pot of money that could be used in other circumstances automatically. It would actually have to be some event that would rise to a significant enough level that we would feel as a legislature that it warranted use of this particular mechanism. We already provide hundreds of millions of dollars in disaster relief on a regular basis, so I don't think that people who suffered from, the, you know, who have gone through the tragedy of flooding necessarily would think that this kind of catastrophe fund would be something that they would need versus the other kinds of aid that we already provide. Inherent in this concept is that this is a widespread event that caused major injury and significant loss of life, and it was not due to an act of God. I mean, that alone is a highly unusual event, just to be able to say that. And creating a remedy such as this, I think, is narrow in its application to that type of event. You know, I guess the key point is, if we do nothing, if we do nothing, we're talking about $1 million total recovery from the state of Minnesota possible, $6,000 a person. If we eliminate the state's liability cap, getting a little bit to Representative Emmer's point of view, then we are making policies that affect local government and state government in its daily business in claims that arise against the state. And we are making policy that applies to a broad number of circumstances based on one unusual event, rather than creating something that will only deal with future highly unusual events. And I think that was both questions.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the answer. I have no problem with setting this up for this particular catastrophe. I have more of a problem having a permanent fund. I can see events that you know, down the road where members will ask, you know, the ethical and moral question, why don't we enact the compensation fund for other incidents where the state could conceivably be considered liable for failing to do X, Y, or Z. I think, you know, that's my concern about it. And I don't know if other members have that concern, but that's where it is.
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hamer, I share your concern generally about the precedent. That's one of the things I wanted to address a little bit, but I think you raised the issue, so I'm not gonna spend a lot of time there. Other than I would say, Representative Winkler, I think one of the places where the argument about or trying to compare what you're doing here with what we do when there's been other natural disasters, floods or tornadoes, we don't typically provide monies for individuals for their pain and suffering, for their lost wages. And of course, in the southeastern Minnesota flooding, we did do some business relief stuff. But generally speaking, we're not doing the kind of relief that you're looking to provide here. I have a number of questions. I'm going to try to go through them very quickly, and I'm going to go through the through them in the order that they're in the bill. But I hope we don't jump around too much. But if you look at the bottom of page 2, you're asking that the special master report to the Attorney General. Why the Attorney General? Why not the legislature? I mean, we're the body appropriating the funds here, and I guess I'd like to know what the special master, or I know Representative Emmer has an amendment to have somebody else. I'd like to know whoever is administering this fund, what they're spending the money on, and we haven't always had the best cooperation from the Attorney General's office in terms of getting information, and I guess I'd like to understand why you've sought to delegate that to the Attorney General.
Representative Winkler. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The simple reason is that they are the ones, in my mind, in state government who would be most expert in reviewing administrative expenses from somebody like the special master performing legal duties. I don't think there'd be any problem if we asked them to report their expenses to the legislature as well. The basic premise is that the Attorney General knows how to review those kinds of expenses in a way that a legislative committee typically wouldn't.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I don't have an amendment now. I may in the future. I think that if the legislature is going to appropriate money to this, the legislature itself ought to be getting reports from whoever's administering the fund. And again, I apologize. There's not a logical flow to some of my questions, but if you go to page 3, determination of compensation, and I chatted with you very briefly on the floor, Representative Winkler, about this. There's nothing here in the bill as it exists today that would address the situation. Let's say I was an individual on the 35W bridge, and I already had a bad back. I had a bunch of surgeries, whatever, and now my back is even worse, or is re-injured, or is aggravated. And typically, when these types of cases are litigated, the plaintiff is responsible to prove how much, what the change as a result of the accident was, and gets compensated for that. There's nothing in here directing the special master as to what they're supposed to do about those types of situations. That's just one that came to the top of my head. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Representative Winkler.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, I think that would be potentially a fine thing to specifically require the special master to consider. I guess my assumption has been that the typical legal process and legal analysis that goes into evaluating any claim would be used in this instance. And the discussion that I have had and the thought that I have had is that the special master certainly would be either a judge or a mediator of good reputation in the community, or a former judge, but somebody who is used to, is going to bring all of the kind of assumptions about the legal system into evaluating these claims. If you think there's a need for a particular requirement regarding a pre-existing condition, like a bad bag that was exacerbated by the collapse, I'd be open to that. Though I tend to think it would be, if we start to put specific mandates in, then you open up the issue of having to do kind of everything, or risk people thinking it's not supposed to be included.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, thank you. The other piece in with regard to determining the amount of compensation that I guess, and there's not really a question here, just a concern that I would note, is that the whole concept of non-economic damages is incredibly subjective. And I'm not sure, we're kind of giving a lot of power to this special master. We typically reserve that to, six men and women in a jury to decide after hearing facts presented by both sides about a whole bunch of issues. So the subjectiveness of the non-economic damages does raise a concern for me. I'm comfortable with doing something to make sure that some of these victims aren't left destitute as a result of the medical expenses, but I just raise that as a concern. I do have a real concern, however, Representative Winkler and Mr. Chair, with regard to, as I read through subdivision 4 and 5, I'm concerned that we might have set up, and I suspect inadvertently, a situation where a victim could receive a double recovery, if you will. As I read this, if somebody who was on the bridge brings their claim and is compensated by the fund, and then at some time in the future resolves a case with a third-party tortfeasor, there's nothing in here that specifically says that the third-party tortfeasor or anybody is entitled to any kind of offset under 548 or anything else. And so if you could address that, I think that the state is protected, the fund is protected, and has the ability to get an offset, but third parties don't, as I read this today, and I'm a little concerned about that, and I don't want to set up a situation where somebody, because they have a great lawyer or their timing is a certain way, that they get a windfall that somebody else might not be entitled to. Could you speak to that?
Representative Winkler, Mr. Chair, Representative Colesy, the language in the bill and the sections that you're talking about is the effort is to have a Perringer-style release, which is a release that essentially bars a double recovery by a victim, and it leaves the contribution and indemnity between the state and a third party to be sorted through in a subsequent proceeding if the plaintiff, in this case a survivor, is ultimately successful in recovery against a third party tortfeasor like a private contractor. The contractor then would seek indemnity from the state of Minnesota, but the court, in determining the total damages, would consider the other resources or the other funds that the survivor received in its application and ultimately grant of compensation from the state. So I if there's technical changes that need to be made, I certainly would be open to whatever language is necessary. We try to accomplish that through this language. But that's the goal.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I think what I'm hearing you say then, and again, I just read this earlier this afternoon, and I haven't, and I could be mistaken in my reading of it, and I look forward to chatting with you further, but I think what I'm hearing you say is you're not looking to set up a situation. You're looking to make sure that a victim who was on the bridge gets fair and reasonable compensation for their economic and non-economic damages, and they get it once, correct?
Correct. The idea is that the state is simply in a position of trying to fill the gap between what medical insurance might pay and your total out-of-pocket medical expenses, between what you might receive from a disability policy and the total amount of disability that you're going to receive. The idea is simply that the state, all the private resources that a person brings to the table should be counted, and whatever is left, the state of Minnesota should pick up. That's the concept. And the idea is simply that we don't want to leave these people holding the bag financially for this bridge collapse, nor do we want to create a windfall for the survivors or for anybody else involved in the incident.
Representative Cole.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. One final question. Representative Winkler, I know this is a policy committee, but you've got a blank in terms of the appropriation. How much money are we talking about?
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bowles, the range of resources discussed with the Senate and with the governor's staff has been in the range of $30 to $60 million. And we'll leave it to a finance committee to put the specific dollar figure in there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, a few questions to Representative Tamar's point about the permanent fund that would be created under Chapter 8A and then the timing under Section 3 for appointment of the special master, determination of compensation, payments, et cetera. I haven't yet been able to put together a specific timeline with each of those finite periods, but it does seem to me like this. I want you to confirm if this is true, that while the fund is being created, out of technical necessity, the special revenue fund. It's actually just in the general fund. But while that fund is being created, there are specific time constraints for each step of the process as you've laid them out. So am I correct in that the legislature would appropriate under the Chapter 8A so that the fund would then have resources, but those resources would not be held ad infinitum. There's a finite point at which the process is complete for that catastrophe. Is that correct?
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, the missing piece in the bill right now is a date by which survivors must submit their claim to the state. And frankly, that date, I think, is I think a little bit depends on how quickly legislation gets through the process. And the idea is you try to do it quickly, but you also need to give people enough time to assemble which materials they need and to have a good sense of what kind of long-term effects they may suffer. And so you want to make sure that they have adequate time to do that and to submit the claim. But the special master has to be appointed within 30 days. It's 120 days for the special master to give an answer to the claim that's submitted, and then the survivor has 30 days to respond. So if all the survivors, if we move quickly in the legislature and the survivors all submit their claim materials quickly, there's no reason why the entire fund couldn't be depleted by the end of the year.
Just perhaps this is more of a structural GovOps kind of question, but what happens with the remaining funds? Did I miss something that happens if, let's say, there's, you know, $2 million, $3 million left that is unclaimed?
Representative Wayne Clinton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, I have to double-check this, and Mark Shepard is here, but my understanding is that there's no date by which those funds would revert to the general fund. I think the assumption is that all of those funds would be distributed to survivors. To the extent that they're not, I suppose a subsequent legislative action could move that money back into the general fund or wherever else.
Quick follow-up.
Kalin, just as I think maybe for the record, Mr. Shepard, I believe, said yes to it.
He nodded vigorously.
He nodded. But we can't hear the nod. Today his brain isn't shaking it.
Representative Westrum heard the nod. Would you be open to putting a finite, to actually, rather than requiring a second legislative step, legislative action, to actually putting in a reversion element, and just to make sure if there are funds left over that they do revert?
Representative Wayne Clark.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, I'm open to the concept. I'd want to have some more detailed discussion about how to best do that or what the pitfalls may be. I'd rather not do it on the fly here at this committee.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Culver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, I have a question about the data practices standards in this bill. And generally when the state puts out large amounts of money, there needs to be some accountability factor for that. And in looking at your bill, what I'm seeing here is that the only thing the public can have access to is a name, an amount, and a release. And in fact, if you look under Section 7 on page 5, data collected for the purposes of administering the fund are classified as private as well. And so you've put a pretty thick black sheet around this whole process, and where's the accountability or the ability of the public to be able to gauge or ascertain whether or not these payouts are justified, how the process works? I think that I understand an individual's right to privacy, but there's also a public need for accountability, so I'd hope you'd take another look at this, and that I think that people will be very interested in how this money and what the underlying principles are for distribution of the money and who gets how much for what reasons. And as I read your bill, I don't think any of that is going to be available as a result of the strict standards for the data practices.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I'm just not shocked that you raised this issue. And thank you for doing so. But the answer is, this is my best sense of what I think makes sense. If you have a better way to structure it, I'd certainly be open to it. The idea is not to cloud this in a veil of secrecy, but to protect the privacy of individuals. The amount of the award certainly is going to be a public record, and I think many actually of the survivor stories have been fairly public. If you think that there's some kind of interim layer of information privacy that you think makes sense for certain aspects of this process or certain aspects of their application, I'd be open to that discussion. But again, I'd rather not try to make those decisions without having had a chance to talk more thoroughly about it first.
Well, Mr. Chair, is it your intent to move this bill out of committee today? Or
pardon?
Is it your intent to move this bill out of committee today?
Yes. Representative Holt.
Mr. Chair, to that point, that I hadn't thought about that, Representative Holberg, but I just leaned over to my good friend, Counselor Emmer, and he confirmed what I thought. I mean, court files, unless sealed by the court, are open. So if somebody is injured in an automobile accident, a bridge collapse, whatever it might be, and they bring a civil action, I, as a member of the public or the press or whomever, has an opportunity to go down to the courthouse and get whatever's on file, including, you know, the verdicts that that may ultimately be rendered and evidence that's introduced, etc. All that's public information. And so I think we might have the presumption kind of flipped here if what we're trying. I think Representative Holberg raises a good point. I mean, we're talking about, as you said, potentially $30 to $60 million of taxpayer money, and we may not know how and why certain decisions are being made unless there's an ability to shine some light on that. So, Representative Holberg, I don't know if you have the ability to scribble out some a mandatory language, but I think if we're going to move this out of here today, I think that is a good point.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Holt.
Data practice back and scribbling out language are not two things that go together very well.
Representative Holberg, there's a lot of stops left on this bill. So, Representative Winkler, did you have a reply to that, or?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, I mean, yes, the public is aware of what happens in the courtroom by necessity, and again, if there is a reasonable way to make some of the information more available for the purposes of accountability, I think I would be open to that. But there are, I think, four committees left to go. I'd be certainly happy to work with you and Representative Simon, who also worked a lot on the data practices issues, to find a resolution that would meet your concerns. But again, as you said, scribbling out language now certainly wouldn't be the best way to approach that.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This reminds me of one of my favorite recent headlines from The Onion, that being CIA discovers it's been using black highlighters after all these years. Okay, I thought it was funny anyway. I had a separate question, though, Mr. Chair, before, not necessarily on this line of questioning, but related to testifiers, and I apologize for coming in late, but we've heard from Representative Winkler on this. Have we heard from any other testifiers on this?
Representative Lesh, I asked if anybody wanted to testify, and nobody waved their hand or stood up or anything responded.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, I realize maybe some other people may have come in late too, but this issue strikes me that we're taking it up, and is this the first stop, Representative Winkler, in committee for the bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, it's neither the first nor close to the last.
Okay, well, whatever the case, I'm sorry I missed the first ones. Nonetheless, Mr. Chair, it seems to me that, you know, government in determining whether or not victims should receive compensation or how much is in sort of a strange position where we have kind of a conflict of interest suggesting we have liability and how much liability. There are other people in this room, at least one I recognize, who has clients that could be involved with this. And I, for one, know that I would like to hear from other people as well, other testifiers. So I don't know, Representative Winkler, if they're necessarily on the same page with you, but I don't know if I'm going to be hearing everything if government is talking about suing itself, so to speak, and there are other players that I'd like to hear from at some point before I make a final decision on this bill.
Well, Representative Lesh, I don't know that the members can call down people from the audience if they don't want to come down, although in Representative, when Abrams chaired tax, he set that precedent, but I think most committees have not. If they're unwilling to come down to testify, I'm not sure that that we have the right to require them to do that. Just because they stuck their head in the door, they're subject to the Lesh news or something. Representative Winkler, I don't know of anybody that wants to testify. I've asked some that were involved here that have clients.
Mr. Chair, I don't think there's anybody who doesn't want to, but I think if there are specific questions, we direct to them, and they're more than happy to do so.
Yes, if Representative Lesh, if, I imagine if you have questions of somebody, I think you're looking at somebody, and he will come down, I believe.
Is Mr. Meserly available and willing to testify?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Representative Lesh, I suspected, and he had said that he would come down.
And I would also add, Mr. Chair, my apologies to anyone else who I don't recognize who's active. Competition, as it were, the competition. But
Representative Lesh, do you have a question?
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meserly, thanks for coming down, even though you didn't necessarily come here to testify. But I have some concerns related to we being representatives of state government in Minnesota, and taking it of our own volition to decide that there is liability and how much liability there should be without, so far at least, an exhaustive examination of how that liability is accounted for. And I've spoken with several members already about looking at this as essentially the damages portion of a bifurcated trial towards liability. That second portion on damages obviously goes to several things, including how egregious that breach would be on the part of the state of Minnesota. I assume that you have looked at the proposed legislation, and if you have, do you see, Mr. Meserly, any concerns with this committee or this legislature deciding, as I stated, what liability should be in this instance, or as the bill directs it?
Well, Representative Lesh, the real reason the bill is here is Article 1, not Article 2, but go ahead. Mr. Meserly, first state your name.
Yes, my name is Chris Meserly, and for the last 27 years I've worked with Robbins, Kaplan, Miller, and Cerisi, and we are leading a group of 20 law firms statewide who are representing between 90 and 100 victims of the bridge collapse, all on a pro bono basis. We represent, for example, most of the kids on the school bus. We are supportive of the bill, and we're very grateful for everyone here, their support for such a fund. It is my understanding, Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative, that this is not an intent to establish liability. Much like the 9/11 fund, which was established by Congress a few days after the 9/11 disaster, there wasn't an accounting for liability by the U.S. government or by anyone else. And I think by virtue, my understanding is that this being a truly unique and one-of-a-kind event in our history, that from a policy standpoint, it's my understanding that's its intent, and it's why the victims that are here and elsewhere that have lost loved ones and who have suffered serious brain injuries and other injuries are so grateful for what's being done here. So I don't think it's related to the culpability of the state so much. I mean, it is a state-owned bridge, state-operated bridge, state-inspected bridge, and it was the state's obligation to make sure it was safe. Those issues, someday, some months or years from now, will be determined, but it's my understanding that's really independent of what's being proposed here.
I think that's, no, he answered my question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Meserly.
Yes, sir.
Are there any other comments, questions? Representative Emmer, did you want to, you had an amendment that you said you'd wait until after the discussion?
Yeah.
Do you want to offer your
amendment? I would offer the A5 amendment. And briefly, as luck would have it, I didn't have a chance to talk to Representative Winkler again. But I'm hoping that he'll actually look at this as a friendly amendment. This simply replaces the special master with the administrative law judge. It was brought to my attention that we already have set up through the state the Office of Administrative Hearings, which is particularly well suited towards the administration of this fund that Mr. Representative Winkler is proposing. So I would offer the A5 amendment, and I'm interested in Representative Winkler's thoughts.
Representative Winkler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Emmer. Actually, I did hear from Representative De La Forest and Judge Littman prior to the hearing, so I didn't know you were going to offer it, but at least I had seen it. I guess I don't see this as a hostile amendment, but I prefer not to do it. There's nothing saying that the State Executive Council couldn't designate the administrative law judge as the special master as in a tribunal form. And there's also another version or a bill going through the Senate that establishes a panel, a special master panel. And without having gone through in detail the rules for the Office of Administrative Hearing to determine their suitability, in my view, I guess I just don't think the amendment is ready, whether I'm ready to adopt it yet. I'm not principally opposed, but I wouldn't adopt it until I've had a chance to go through it in further detail.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, then out of respect for you and to give you some time, I'll withdraw the amendment at this point, and hopefully we can work together and see if it's workable for you at another stop for the bill. I'll withdraw the amendment.
Representative Cole.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, can you just help me out here? What is this executive council? Who is it? What's it made up of? I don't see that defined in the bill. Does it already exist?
Representative Winkler.
I mentioned it's the executive council is the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, secretary of state, and state auditor. So it's the state constitutional officer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, is that defined somewhere in statute already? I wasn't familiar with that. If it is, that's great, but I was unfamiliar with it.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, it is. I couldn't cite you statute line and verse.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Is there any other comments before we vote? Okay. Representative Bigham renews her motion.
Yeah, I can renew my motion to move it to
Commerce.
Correct?
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no.
No.
Carries. Representative Cornish moves the minutes of March 13th, 2007, March 14th, 2007, March 19th, 2007, and February 14th of 2008. All in favor say aye. All opposed, no. Carries 1-0. okay, I hope there's a motion to adjourn. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
All opposed.
Aye.